Greetings and welcome to Dang That's Weird, where we take a look at life's weirdest moments. My name is Spencer Worth Davis, and today we're talking with Andrew. Andrew, how you doing?
Yeah, good man. Thanks. How you going?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for stopping by.
No worries. It's nice to be with you.
So the way this works is I just have one question for you, and that is, what is the weirdest thing you've ever experienced?
Okay, so this one needs a little bit of background, so I'll set the scene a little bit.
Okay.
I was about, 15 years old. We're talking 2003. And I lived in like a little coastal town in East Coast Australia. So by little, I mean about 50, 70,000 people. But to us, it felt little. Everything was super spread out. It wasn't easy to get anywhere. And I was in a relatively sort of conservative family. So mum and dad, I was an only child. They didn't really let me do much, go places. And of course, that meant I was determined to do stuff and go places.
Sure, as you will. Yeah.
So I had a friend whose mum was pretty much the opposite. She was sort of a young single mum, liked to go out and hang out with her friends on the weekends, trusted the boys at home, for better or worse. So I would go and hang out with him on Friday nights, and we would sort of just, you know, be teenage boys. We'd download things to get viruses off LimeWire. We'd go out and sort of Linkin Park num.exe. We'd, you know, just go out and sort of get in the streets and just go see what we could find, explore all the back roads and do that sort of stuff that, you know, you'd love to do as a kid.
Sure.
And this was like a Friday night ritual. We knew his mom would usually get home from like being out with her friends about like 2:30 or 3 in the morning.
Was going hard. Okay.
So I mean, looking back on it now, I'm like, probably not the best, but
whatever works.
At the time we thought it was the best thing ever. Yeah. So, this was like a Friday in December of 2003, and we were doing our usual thing, and my friend's brother had a basketball game on. So we thought, we'll go for a wander, we'll watch his match, you know, he can play, and then we'll sort of wander off into town and just see what trouble we can cause. So we did that about 10 o'clock or so. His match finished about 10:45, something like that. And then we sort of wandered off towards town. And so the area that this is, there's sort of like a main highway that runs down like the whole east coast of Australia, basically. And where our town is, you've sort of got one end of it heading out to the north towards Brisbane, and then you've got one end heading out to the south towards Sydney. And so you've got all this bushland spread out sort of on either side of town around these highways. And we were sort of up near the north end. And to get to where we needed to go, we had to like duck through three different suburbs in like a horseshoe almost to get to this highway and where the basketball stadium was. So it was a fair trek. We're talking like an hour or so maybe to get back. Okay. Next thing we know, it's like 1:30 in the morning. We've been in town for hours, like riding in shopping trolleys, talking to the guys fishing, and we just lost track of time. So we sort of panicked a bit and sort of made our way back towards the basketball stadium, and clocking it, we're like, there was no way in hell we were going to get back. And so we figured we've got to like find another way. And they were pretty well versed at just like, I guess, bush bashing in that area and figuring out a way to get to where they needed to go. And there was like a large bush, like bushland area between our airport at that end of town and like our horse racing, like race course, which is right next to their house. So we thought if we can get a track there, which they've known to take in the day at least, we'll take that, we'll get back, probably shave off half an hour, 40 minutes off the walk, and get back before their mum gets back so we don't get our butts kicked. It was like weighing up those options of, you know, go into the bush in the dark or get back too late and potentially my parents find out that I wasn't just sitting there playing like Nintendo 64 all night. So,
right.
So you sort of have that bravado with three young guys too. And like, well,
groups of teenage boys are not known for their good decision making. No.
And as soon as one suggested it, the other two were like, oh yeah, like I was going to say that, you know. Yeah. So we just, you know, peer pressured ourselves and went down this track. And it was pretty well lit. Like I've looked it up since just to sort of confirm my memory. Cause I've, you know, human memory is pretty fallible. Like you tell the story often enough through the years and you're like, did that really happen? Was that really true?
Right.
It was pretty much a full moon that night. So my memory of it sort of being relatively easy to see, sort of heading down the track, feels right. And I mean, we'd been out in the dark for hours, so our eyes were pretty well adjusted by this point.
Mm-hmm.
It was like about a meter and a half wide. It was just like well-trodden dirt. It was basically like a fancy game trail. Like enough people had trodden it through the years that it had just become a thing. And so we started heading down this track. And it was sort of like the shape of a boomerang, where you'd have like one long stretch for about half the distance, and then it would sort of pivot 45 degrees and head towards their place for the rest of the distance. And we got about like 20%, 30% of the way through a nice, quiet, clear night. And we just started to hear sort of like rustling and movement in the bush. And none of us really said anything straight away. And I think like it was this unspoken awareness of like, yeah, we all heard that. It's probably just a kangaroo. Like, this is fine.
Which, as a non-Australian, kangaroos are also terrifying, and I would not want to encounter one out in the wild at night. But I know you guys are a little bit different.
It's like our things of like what's ranked highest to kill you, and the kangaroo's on the list, but you're like, well, there's plenty of other stuff out here. We'll just sort of put it in the not worried about bucket.
It's on the list, but it's not at the top of the list. Got it.
Yeah, work harder, guys. we knew that area was pretty much like infested with roos as well. Like that end of town, it was known that, you know, they would run out on the highway and stuff all the time. It was just like they were playing Frogger, like it was part of their like routine, I think. So that was where my brain went to straight away. And I'm guessing the guys did as well, because they, like I said, they said nothing and we just kept going. But it became pretty clear pretty quick that it probably wasn't a kangaroo. So it was sort of pacing us, like it was probably behind us, 200-300 feet away, I would say, just like off to one side and back a little bit. And it was sort of just keeping pace with us enough that it wasn't getting any closer, any further away. It was just sort of, just as quietly as it seemingly could possibly be, was just, keeping tabs on us. So my brain then shifted to, all right, angry, potentially homeless person that's living in the bush, and we've out there sort of talking loudly, yelling, and maybe disturbed them. Like everywhere, unfortunately, we had a pretty like hefty homeless problem, and those guys found the best places that they could to take a snooze of the night, and there was a few people that would pitch tents out that way. So
someone probably wouldn't follow you though, right? Like that wouldn't really... That wouldn't really make sense.
That was the thing. Like, my brain's a great worst case enabler. So, like, you hear that sort of thing, and you're like, okay, maybe this person suddenly decided that, you know, tonight I'm going to chill out, and the next group of three young boys that come through here, I'm going to scare the crap out of them. Like, that specific anxiety kicked in, and sure. I'm like, you know, whoever it is, they might just be out to give us a scare, or maybe we've just trampled through their campsite in the dark, and we don't know, and they're going to come and turf us out.
Yeah.
Okay. So we kept going, but whatever this was sort of picked up pace, and you could eventually tell that there was like, it was two distinct footsteps. It wasn't just like this amorphous crashing in the bush anymore. It was like a sort of a thump, thump, thump sort of noise. It was breaking twigs, breaking branches.
That rules out a lot of animals.
Well, in Australia, we don't even have like large predators either. Like, you know, depending where you were, you could sort of say, like overseas, people might think it might be a bear or even just a larger, like a game animal or something. But in our case, you get the two legs and you get weight, and there's not really much
right. That
can account for that. Like koalas, you know, of scale, don't really get that big anymore, thank God. So I mean, it
could still be a kangaroo, right?
Yeah, but in saying that, they tend to, like, the way that they hop, it's like one sound after the other, which is a super Australian thing to, like, have that programmed into my brain of just ruling that out straight away. Yep, not a roo.
Yeah. It's like how in the Midwest, in the U.S., like, it seems like deer are probably our equivalent of kangaroos for y'all.
Mm.
Like, they're just kind of everywhere, and you don't really worry about them too much.
That's the thing. And like, we sort of have deer and stuff through there as well, like introduced species, but definitely not the same numbers as you guys. But yeah, they're like a novelty when you see them when you're driving somewhere, but they're just everywhere. It is how it is. I guess at this stage I was starting to freak out, like trying to let the guys know, but I knew that something was up, like it just wasn't right. And you sort of had that feeling starting where it's sort of like that high strangeness feeling, and I've only sort of felt it once before in my life, where things seem a little bit too quiet and you're just so hyper on edge, and like your fight or flight system's telling you that there's something super, super off. And so we sort of, like, I got the guys to pick up the pace a little bit, and sort of the first time we acknowledged that, like, something was up. And I sort of said to them that, you know, at the rate that it's going, where it is, it's, like, it's pretty much going to cut us off where we need to turn unless we, you know, haul ass and get around the corner and get moving. So we sort of started to pick up our own pace, and obviously this thing then just did the exact same thing, but it sort of outpaced us now. It was basically running at this point, whatever it was. So we started to run too. So we got to the end of where that bend is, which, like, we were pretty close to that at this stage, legged it around there and kept going. Issue being, my two friends were, like, really sporty guys. So the one of them, he played basketball, like 6 foot something, you know, track and field. The other one was into athletics. Like, I was into Game Boys. So, like, I was into Doritos. I wasn't equipped for this situation.
Not all on the same sprinting level here?
No, I mean, like, 10, 15 meters you had me at, you know, where's my asthma puffer? These guys, like, pretty much, like, you know, instant acceleration off they go, and I'm behind them straight away. I'm doing my best to keep up, like, get around the corner, keep going. And then sort of they were that far ahead of me then that I could barely see them in the dark. And I started to, like, I yelled out to my friend to sort of slow down and wait for me. They didn't slow down straight away, obviously, but eventually they sort of did.
Good friends. Yeah. Nice. Thanks.
I know. Like, I sort of spoke to them about it afterwards, and they're like, "Oh, we didn't hear you." And I'm like, "You know, bully didn't hear me. Like, the only other thing that we could hear was this thing in the bush behind us. Right. Everything else was dead silent.
We all heard the footsteps from 100 feet away, but you didn't hear me yelling at you?
It's like, no, bro, you were whispering. Like, no. Wait, guys, slow down. So eventually they did. Like, I say eventually, it would have been like 5-10 seconds, but it felt like so much longer. They sort of stopped and they turned around. But when they turned around, and this is the bit that always stuck with me, is when they turned around, they, like, instantly froze and they looked behind me and they weren't looking at me. And it's just, like, it's just one of those moments that, like, it was, like, time sort of stopped for a second. I was like, oh, shit.
Regardless of who or what is behind you, you never want to be in that, oh, shit, it's behind me situation.
You're sort of like, do I even turn around? Like, do I want to know? But I only realized at that stage that the crashing had probably stopped for 15, 20, 30 seconds. Like, we just kept running and it hadn't even registered to me that I'd stopped hearing it. And you sort of, like, I turned around to where the guys were looking, and sort of right where that bend was, where we'd just come around, you could see basically a head and shoulders and, like, eye shine sort of sticking out from behind a tree. And there's nothing in the bush that should have a head and shoulders that are, like, taller than my mate's brother, and he was, like, 6 foot something.
And humans aren't going to give off eye shine. So,
I mean, you'd hope not. This was instantly, like, I knew straight away that it was something that shouldn't be there, like, something I just shouldn't be seeing. And I guess in terms of background at this stage, like, I grew up with a mum that was pretty into the weird and wacky. Thanks, Mum. She brought me up right. But in saying that, like, you'd seen all the Yeti stuff on TV as a kid, like, growing up in the, like, late 80s, early 90s, it was everywhere. But, like, there was never much in print or media about the Yowie in Australia. And that's, I guess now, you know, drum roll, that's what I think this thing was, is that it's essentially our Bigfoot. Same sort of traits, same look. Behaviors can range from anywhere from scaring people, like what sort of I was going through, to, you know, reports of, like, people being attacked and stuff being, like, flipped over. And, you know, so it's the same as Bigfoot. Different regions seem to have different levels of, like, aggression, I suppose. Like, just the trends in reports. But that's sort of where my brain went straight to, is like, this thing looks totally like a Yeti. Like, it looks like the thing from the, like that famous video, the Patterson Gimlin video, which I'd seen on, you know, 500 different documentaries as a kid.
Right.
It was just that same outline. You could see like some fur texture on it in the moonlight, like obviously not a huge amount of detail, but there was just these like glinting eyes, this head and this shoulder that was probably as wide as my torso. And it just sort of looked at us from behind this tree. It was like swaying a little bit, I think. And we were just like, we just stood there. Like we didn't, like nobody moved. Like we just didn't know what to do. Like no one said anything. It was just like literally at that point, it was dead silent. There was not a noise coming out of us, coming out of it anywhere.
And so what do you do? You're just having a stare down with Bigfoot in the bush?
That's the thing, is like, we can't go, obviously can't go back the way we went because it's standing there. And right. I know for a fact I ain't going to outrun this thing. Like if it wanted to do anything to us, it was just, even from the start, like you look at, like we looked back at it, we spoke about it afterwards, and it was completely making a choice of sort of where it was and the speed it was going. Like it was hurting us essentially. Like I think it was just sort of shepherding us out of where it didn't want us to be. Mm-hmm. At any point it could have just got to us if it really wanted to.
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, if it's pacing then, you for that long and seems to also know where that path goes, like.
I think its intention was basically to push us that way. And then to sort of, it was almost like a bit of a bluff charge or like a fake out sort of thing of like, if I speed up, these guys are going to speed up, then I can get behind them again, push them out the other direction, which to me shows like a really high level of intelligence, like to understand, oh, this is where the hairless like weirdos go. Like I'll push them that way.
So you think it just wanted you out, like that was its territory and it just wanted you guys out of there.
That's sort of what I've projected on it through the years. Cause like, as you guess, this sort of thing pops up in your mind, like pretty often. Like I'm a pretty straight shooter sort of guy, like background in psychology, I work in government, but sort of got this one major experience as a kid I just can't reconcile still. You can't sort of put it somewhere that's not, out of the norm. So for all the time I've thought about it, it just really seemed that it was in control of the entire encounter, and it just did, we'd obviously walked far enough along the track where it's like, can't send them really back the way they came because it's, where I was and where I don't want them to be, so I'll just push them this way. It never once felt threatening. It was just, I think, terrifying simply because of what it was.
Right. Did you just keep going then?
So we stood there for, I don't know how long it was, like 5 seconds, 10 seconds. It wasn't a long time. Mm-hmm. And then this thing just took one step, essentially, like one solid stride, so straight across, and it was out the other side of the track, like into the bush. So we got like one second maybe glimpse of sort of the whole silhouette. And it was just there was moonlight, but sort of it was a big muddy sort of movement of shadows and sort of an occasional bit of texture, but you could clearly tell it was just something of mass, like it was chunky. And it sort of, for like a meter and a half, 2 meter wide track, it just took one step to clear it. Like it had a decent gait on it. And then it was sort of dead quiet again. Like we couldn't even hear it moving on the other side of the track. So we sort of didn't know straight away where it was or what it was doing. And I think that's what prompted us to maybe, turn around and get moving again, like shook us out of our, it was almost like we were hypnotized, like, and then it sort of shook us out of it and we managed to start, self-preservation kicked back in and we managed to start running back the other way.
Yeah. So this thing was on two legs, bipedal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Bigger than any of the three of you?
Yeah, so my friend's brother, like I said, 6 foot something, but he was a pretty wiry sort of guy, like really built for speed, like his athletics and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. This thing was like, I'd compare it in size to maybe like a gorilla that I've seen at the zoo. Like it was really well built, but okay. it wasn't like, I guess, extreme. Like you hear some Bigfoot reports and stuff and they're like, oh yeah, it was 9 foot tall and it was as wide as a caravan. And no, it was... it was big. It was bigger than a person, and it was, its shoulders and stuff looked to be wider than a person's, but it wasn't like off the scale, like, you know, 10, 12 foot tall sort of thing. But it was just, if it was a person, I mean, that's like, you know, the most ripped homeless person I've ever seen in my entire life.
Well,
like,
and also covered in fur, correct?
Yeah. And somehow has like LED, like, sunglasses in 2005 or whatever, 2003 or whatever it was.
Right, yeah, the eye shine thing doesn't really add up either.
My old man eventually, when I told him the story, he thought it was like a guy in a ghillie suit, but like those other factors rule that out as well. And then also, why is a guy in a ghillie suit like randomly out in the woods in a, you know, backwater town?
Right, just trying to scare some kids on a Friday night? I guess it's possible, I guess, but seems weird.
I've heard more specific hobbies, but yeah, let's hope that guy's not out there. But I guess to sort of round out the encounter, we started running again. And like, I didn't stop this time. Like once I'd seen this thing, my body was suddenly like, well, you know, I don't care that you can't breathe. You're just going to keep moving. And so we sprinted the whole rest of the distance, and eventually we heard it like pick up again, and it just sort of did the exact same thing on the way in, as just sort of paced us on its way out. When we got to the other end of the track, we like sprinted straight across to a street light that was on like the closest side street, and sort of just caught our breath there for a second. And we did catch one more glimpse of it sort of in the tree line, like while we were waiting there. It sort of just, I guess, was checking that we were out or gone, and then it sort of just turned off and wandered back into the bush.
Wow. So from when you first heard this thing to when you last saw or heard it, like how much time passed roughly?
Well, we thought that track would probably take us about like 25 or 30 minutes. And I reckon we probably did it in like 15 or 20, like with the speed that we were running, like the first third of it or so was just like a slow stroll. But then the rest of it was obviously taken pretty quickly.
A sprint with one short pause in the middle.
Exactly. Time to not even catch my breath, but to pretend I didn't, keep moving.
Yeah.
But I guess then we headed back to his mum's place, and we sort of sat down and we were like, what just happened? You know, like we were trying to process it.
Yeah.
And we jumped back on their computer that still somehow miraculously managed to connect to the internet after, you know, all we'd put it through. And, you know, just started Googling like Australia Yeti and all this sort of stuff, trying to figure out what we'd seen. And we stumbled across the website of like the Australian version of the BFRO, which is like the Australian Yowie Research. Mm-hmm. They've been around for decades. And so we typed up everything that we could remember between the three of us and submit it to those guys. And that's sort of what prompted me to, I guess, submit this to you. Like not long ago, I was just sort of doing a bit of a, I guess like a life admin thing of going back and like finding stuff that I used to have as like favorites in old web browsers and things and collecting memories. And I'd found that old report that's still up online that we submitted in like 2003. So sort of brought it all back.
Did you ever hear back from them at all? Like, or do you know if they looked into it in any way?
And this is probably the funniest part of the story I find is that I got home the next morning and straight away I was like, Mom, Dad, you won't believe what happened last night. And it was the classic moment of getting about one sentence into a story and then realize you're about to dig yourself a massive hole.
Like how do I tell this story without the context of why I was out there in the middle of the night?
Yeah. So like it was too late to abort. So I just had to lay it out for them. I got super grounded, but
fair.
It's like no more 8-man running for you. But they obviously didn't believe me. Like they just thought we were like having them on. And then I posed the counter argument of why would I make up a story to dob myself in for breaking the rules? Like,
right.
So it was like this sort of this duel of opinions, but. The guy that runs the research group, he reached out to me, I think by email, and he was like, hey, like, can I call you? And we'll talk it through. So I agreed to that, and mum and dad weren't really keen on that idea. It was back like 2003. They were like, oh, you know, strangers on the internet, but better not be speaking to any of them.
Sure.
You know, it sounds sort of like something that's a bit fringe even for mum, but I convinced them as long as they could sit there and listen to what I was saying. So, he ended up calling me. I started to lay out what happened to him, but like there was this intimidation factor. It was like, you know, the parental mafia, like they were both sort of just looming over me on this phone call.
Yeah, that's an awkward way to have that conversation for sure.
Yeah, and eventually, like, I sort of just started downplaying things to him, and he's like, well, you know, look, it sounds like enough for me to come and check it out. Like, he was in Sydney. He's like, I can load up the four-wheel drive and I'll come down whenever it was, and, you know, you guys can show me where it happened. And it's like, as soon as that entered that stage of the conversation, my parents like, oh, nope, strange man in a van. And they just sort of like end the call.
Yeah. I mean,
You know, I don't
probably the right choice from their perspective, yeah. But
it's like the dude that hunts things out of mythology wants to come and take your son into the woods. Like, probably.
Maybe not. Maybe let's skip that.
Yeah. It's like the start of its own creepypasta. So that was sort of the end of that with him. I'm pretty sure he's still got the audio recording somewhere because he keeps all of those as well. But yeah, all these years later, I sort of reached out to him and just sent a message and said, hey, like, if you remember those three guys from 2003 and the super unconvincing guy on the phone, it wasn't my fault and it did really happen. You know, and I sort of gave him like map updates and stuff of where it was. He never got back to me after that. His organization's pretty big now, whereas back then it was sort of, I guess, in its earlier stages.
Sure.
But back in 2019, I guess the end of the story, I remember back when I was listening to you guys, you mentioned the Koala Hospital in our town over that East Coast. Mm-hmm. We had a horrible bushfire season that year. It was like, I think, either one of the worst or the worst on record. And pretty much that entire bushland area for miles and miles and miles inland was all just absolutely torched. So I think if anything was living out there, it's had to find a new home now anyway, unfortunately. So, but yeah, the prospect of going back and sort of checking it out for him or anyone else is basically gone at this stage.
But, yeah. Did you ever go back out there after that night and before 2019?
In the day, like I had a look through there during the day. It's like, it's a lot less scary during the day. It's
most things are.
Yeah. But like, it doesn't even have an atmosphere where, like, yeah, it was daunting to sort of go back there and have a look, but it didn't have that atmosphere of feeling in danger. Like, once again, when we even saw the thing, like, it wasn't that it felt threatening to us. It's just that it was an unknown thing. Like, that area itself feels sort of super chill. It's really, really beautiful. It's a nice place to wander. And I'm sure that, you know, probably hundreds of people trek through there every week. And our sort of encounter is the only one that I know of that's ever been reported. So, like, not saying I believe in any of, like, the interdimensional Bigfoot sort of stuff, but, like, that bushland there stretches super out, you know, into the mountains. So I'm wondering whether we just came across one that was either like out there hunting roos for food, like it had come to the coast to hunt maybe, and it was going to head back inland afterwards. But yeah, it didn't feel like it was at home there when I went back.
How,
if that makes sense. Like,
yeah. I'm just trying to sort of like that combined with your sense that it maybe wanted you guys out of its territory, or
I'm wondering if we were the reason it can't have nice things. Like, if coming across us was maybe it's like, I like, this place isn't safe anymore, or
yeah,
you know, there's probably a bunch of people that have encountered something, but you know, unlike us, sort of, you know, like YOLO teenagers, they maybe didn't want everybody else in the world to know like what they'd seen. You know, there's some topics like UFO stuff, for instance, the stigma's starting to drop a little bit, but you know, you go out and tell somebody that you saw a Yowie, especially in Australia, and you're probably not going to get the most like instant, you know, validation, or like they're probably just going to give you a bit of a look of like, you know, Are you sure? Like, right. were you guys drinking and all that sort of stuff? Like, which we weren't, for the record. Like,
that's always so silly to me anyway. Like, have you ever had a couple beers and then hallucinated a Bigfoot? Because I haven't.
I mean, I'd probably drink beers a fair bit more often if that was like an optional extra.
Right? Like, alcohol doesn't make you hallucinate at all. Like, that always seems so silly to me.
And that's the thing. Like, even if we had a few drinks, it's like that cliche UFO line. Like, I know what I saw. Like, you know, there was no ambiguity to it. It wasn't like, you know, I've known, like, my dad eventually confessed to me that he'd seen something when he was up in the mountains fishing once, like in a tree line, but all he saw was like a brown blob, like moving through the trees. And he was like, I didn't see anything detailed on it. Don't know what it was, but it was pretty big. Whereas for us, we were like, all right, we saw an actual like head and shoulders and eyes. And like, we saw legs that moved across the track. There wasn't really any of that blob squatch, like, ambiguity to it.
Blob squatch. You guys don't have bears, right?
No. So I think our largest, I'm totally going to get this wrong. Like, I'm going to butcher this. I think our largest like bush predators would be like wild dogs and boar and that sort of stuff. Like, even like boar not being a predator, but something that can wreck you. Up in Queensland, we've got like cassowaries and that sort of thing. Those like big birds that look like dinosaurs that are super scary. But in our area, there was nothing. Like, you got koalas, you've got like a bunch of like little sort of, you know, forest floor critters and that sort of thing. But apart from the roos and the deer out that way, there really shouldn't have been anything else.
What if it was like 5 koalas in a ghillie suit?
I mean, like, the drop bears are a legend for a reason. I mean, if they're starting to coordinate, then everyone's in trouble.
Well, just saying.
The Australian legends of like various mythological stuff sort of all stem from, I guess, Aboriginal folklore, like the vast majority of them. Mm-hmm. And they do have sort of legends about some pretty weird like creatures that get around. I guess very similar to sort of Native American folklore, where like a lot of them have translated into the modern age, and their name and stuff might have changed, but the general story stayed the same. And like, they do have a legend for like the hairy man, and there's legends for like stuff like the bunyip, which is, I always think of it sort of like the Jersey Devil, where it's just like someone's sort of grabbed a random bits and pieces of things and just, you know, Legoed them together.
Sure. I mean, that's part of what makes it so weird, though, is that so many cultures around the world have some version of Yowie, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, whatever, tall, hairy, humanoid thing out in the woods.
That's sort of what gets me as well.
They seem to have developed these stories independently of one another, you know, or like there are slight deviations around the theme of like a 7 to 8 foot tall, hairy, bipedal ape thing.
Exactly. And like, you think of like the Aboriginal culture here that goes back 60,000 plus years, like, they weren't really having like many visitors back then. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't have dudes sailing over being like, hey, we got these guys with hair all over them back home. Like, tell a friend. Like,
right. Especially from, you know, the Americas, where there was a very similar story developing, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, you've got the, like you said, the Yeren, the Yeti, the Almas, I think, like, there's so many different names for basically the same thing. And I feel like even if cultures did have a way of sort of crossing paths thousands of years ago, the first thing they probably weren't going to tell each other would be like, dude, like, I made up this sick story about this big guy, and he's sort of like us, but he doesn't shave. You know, like, they've probably got more important things to be like conveying than.
It's just an ancient multicultural prank.
That would be amazing. It's like Ashton Kutcher just wanders out of the bush, and he's like, guys, you got punked. But I mean, it does give it some validity. And like, I guess there's like with Bigfoot over there with you guys, there's just that many sightings and stories of it here that it's sort of, you can't just write it off as nothing. And like, even if I hadn't seen it myself, I'd still be on that side of the fence of that there's probably something, whether it's like a surviving species from thousands of years ago, or it's like, even if it's a misidentified something else that we haven't, you know, put on the record yet, but there's definitely something that people are seeing, and we got lucky or unlucky, I suppose, to see it as well.
Yeah. Well, lucky in that there was like no harm done, at least, you know.
That's the thing. Like, it could, if it wanted to, it probably could have just like turned me into a pretzel. Like, it, right. The size of that thing. And I'm a really, like, I'm a pretty slight dude myself. So that's sort of one thing I've reflected on through the years. And like I mentioned earlier, if it really wanted to do something to us, like, it could have. And like, that didn't sort of cross our minds at the time, but it just sort of gives the whole encounter like a different, like a more ominous layer than it probably had in the first place.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Andrew. That was fascinating. And now that I've heard the story from you, I'm going to go read this report and dig into it a little deeper. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing that.
No worries. Thank you for having me on. You guys are doing awesome. And I really appreciate the fact that you've started off a new show like this so we can hear all the weird and wacky stuff that wasn't covered in the previous podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been fun so far. Anything that you want to let people know about or direct people's attention to before we get out of here?
I guess last thing I'll mention is that, like I said earlier, I've sort of got the background in psychology, and I never really trusted my memory on this. So in that written report that you're going to have a look at, there's a few things that, like, I call it out now for what it is. There's a few things in there that one of the other guys might have remembered and written down, but I don't remember myself. Like,
sure.
It's written in there that we heard it like growl or something. Like, I don't remember that. Maybe that happened. And my brain's just like, nope, dissociate the hell out of this one. Which, you know, fair.
Yeah.
But like, I guess to put all of that together, like 95% of what I wrote down all those years ago, like, I can barely remember what I had for lunch last Tuesday. Like, it's still exactly in lockstep with what was in my brain today. And it's sort of just like validated for me, I guess, that what happened really happened. And I'd sort of recommend for folks, if they do have like a weird experience, just write down what you can. I guess we all know, like, you feel like something's such a visceral experience that you'll remember it forever, but stuff does get super like hazy. Being someone in my mid 30s, like, there's so much now, like, pre 20 years old, that's just like gone, man.
memories are funny. You would think sometimes that like, those big moments that, I don't know, I find that those big moments either stick exactly as they were forever, or sometimes they're like even fuzzier than the normal everyday stuff.
That's it. Like, I feel like a lot of them for me attached to like a sight or a smell or a sound. And like, I can't get the memory back unless I find that thing. And without that trigger, it's just like, nope, not going to recall that one.
Yeah.
No, next place.
Or I'll remember like very specific details of those types of moments, but like, it's not a clear picture of the experience as a whole, if that makes sense.
Like, I know what shirt I was wearing, but I don't know who else was there.
Right. Yeah. Or like, I remember exactly what its eyes looked like, but I don't remember if it made a sound, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Not to say that I've had a Bigfoot experience, but just with other, like, you know, very intense or like very unusual experiences, I find that those little details stick out, but the whole picture might be a little fuzzy.
Totally a fair assessment. And it's like the nature of trauma as well. Like,
for sure,
when people go through a traumatic experience, it's like there's few key details they might cling on to, and the rest becomes fuzzy. Like, it's sort of the field I work in, and so I guess that sort of matches in this case as well.
Yeah.
I'd consider it to be traumatic.
I would think being chased by Bigfoot would qualify as trauma.
It's like, you try and pretend you're fine, but then all these years later, here's me talking about it at 35. It's like, it clearly made an impact.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew.
Well, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. This has been fun. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Dang That's Weird is a production of DuVid Media. Make sure to check out all of our amazing shows at duvid.media. And if you have a weird story that you'd like to share, you can send me an email at spencer@dangthatsweird.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 612-208-2744. And until next time, keep it weird.
Vide Media.